Good evening, James McCanney here with my Science Hour. This is for June 8th, 2023. Tonight I have two main topics I'm going to talk about. One is planet Uranus. They just did some analysis with the Hubble Space Telescope and discovered that it has a vortex. Now, you've heard the term vortex. It's kind of a new buzzword on planet Earth here when they're talking about winter weather, like a polar vortex. These systems have existed for decades, but they had to... Well, anyway, that's another story. But anyway, the planet Uranus, I'm going to talk about that and the similarities of that system with other systems around the solar system, other planets that have similar polar vortex types of patterns. And then I'm going to talk, now in previous weeks I've been talking about population growth, the very interesting fact that if you have a population like in a third world country where you double every 10 years, then if you double every 10 years and then double again for the next 10 years and then double again for the next 10 years, that compound interest, in 100 years, you have a 1,000-fold increase in population. So your original population grows 1,000-fold, and in the next 100 years, 1,000-fold more. So populations can grow very quickly given this rule of two. And so anyway, I've talked about that. I'm going to advance from that topic. And I'm going to talk about the rise and fall of societies and creativity. For example, just give you a quick example, and this is going to come in the second half of the show. Societies where there was great prosperity. And a lot of times this came during times of war, oddly enough, and sometimes through times of peace, where you had tranquility, you had leaders that led their nations through tranquil times. And I'm not talking about, I'll talk a little bit about the United States and current societies, but I'm talking about hundreds or thousands of years ago when they did not have machines, they did not have fossil fuels, they did not have nuclear power, they did not have airplanes, they did not have tractors. There was a lot of hand labor, a lot of labor by beasts of burden, for example, in some of these cases. And so they had restricted use of metals. In a lot of the cases, they did use metal. But some cases up into the Middle Ages, using iron, which was a great benefit for stonework, for woodworking, and things like that. And so that allowed them to, say, make things like violins or make things like harps or guitars and have them so perfect that tremendous musical strides occurred. Okay, so anyway, I'm going to stop right there, but that'll be the second half of the show. So back to our little planet Uranus out there that's a number of times the size of planet Earth. The Hubble Space Telescope did some close-up work, which gives you a little bit of the idea of the resolution of that telescope. We're talking about a pinpoint, something that is nothing more than just a grain of sand at a tremendous distance from Earth, and it's able to see one of the poles of Uranus. Now, Uranus only shows part of its atmosphere. It's flipped to the point where it only shows part of its atmosphere back towards us near the sun, on where it changes over time. But right now it's coming into view for the first time ever where we had good equipment to actually see this. Okay, so what they saw then was this vortex motion, kind of like the great red spot of Jupiter, but at the south pole of Uranus. And so what does this mean? It means that there's a cyclonic storm there, basically. And of course, NASA and the boys can't figure out what it's all about, what causes this. And I can tell you, because my weather work deals with this. I've talked about this. Now I'm going to give some other examples of vortices at the poles of planets. Saturn has a hexagonal set of seven vortices that are near its south pole. And what happens is, imagine this. Take seven pennies, put them on a table, put one down, and then group the other six around it. That's seven. And so when you look at the south pole of Saturn, you have a central cyclonic storm and then six cyclonic storms that are around it. And you might think, well, that's out on those planets, those other planets out there. But Earth itself has this same phenomenon. I've seen it many times. If you go to the school maps, that webpage, very good. It shows you the wind systems on Earth at any given time. And flip it down to the South Pole. And if you watch that long enough, you're going to see the weather systems forming various patterns. And occasionally, not too frequently, but not too infrequently either, you find these groups of six storms surrounding a central storm, seven storms. And so basically what's going on is you have the discharge of the vertical electric field that's in that atmosphere, and it's driving cyclonic storms. And they just keep rotating around and around, because what breaks up a cyclonic storm is short-circuiting the ground. And so Saturn has this grouping of six. Earth has this grouping of six, both around one central star, but Uranus just has the single storm, which is interesting. But what's going on here is these are actually being powered by electrical currents from outer space. And so they connect these electrical currents, connect in, and it kind of looks like the best example I can use is a leech on a fish. If you've ever seen a picture of a leech attaches to the fish, and the fish is swimming along and the leech is just kind of attached there. The leech doesn't have any real swimming ability of its own. But it's attached, and this is what the electrical currents look like attaching to our upper atmosphere on planet Earth. And then they drive current systems all the way down to ground. And remember the pillar of fire in the Moses story? That was an electrical connection between Earth and the passing planet Venus in the form of a large comet. And it's the same situation. You have electrical currents, but these are part of the discharge of the solar capacitor by these individual planets. So the Saturn is one of these, Earth is another one, and we'll probably find more of these types of electrical patterns. Saturn, for example, has many, many, many small cyclonic storms that zip around in its atmosphere in belts, and it looks something like the Jupiter belts, which are similar also to the ion and electron belts that are in Earth's upper atmosphere. They're counter-rotating belts. And in a normal atmospheric situation, these counter-rotating belts would not be possible. So what makes them move? What drives them? For example, on planet Earth, we have a equatorial electron beam current that's moving westerly. As you go northerly or southerly on planet Earth, you get to the mid-level jet streams, the mid-latitude jet streams, and they're going easterly. They are positive charged particles. And so they couple, they're driving a magnetic field, and those couple together, and then up at the poles, there is a what is known as a ring current, and is basically moving around, and the electrical currents from Earth discharging the solar capacitor connect in there. And so ultimately, Earth has five counter-rotating bands of electrical current. And Saturn has many, many. Jupiter, I think, has 13. And it's always an odd number. And the electron beam is always in the, as you're looking from the north, magnetic north pole, it's in the clockwise direction. And the positive current is in the counterclockwise direction. That's when you're looking from the north magnetic pole down at the pole of the planet. And even though Earth's magnetic field is a little bit off of the spin axis, it's still pretty close. Okay, so that's a little bit of a discussion about this planet Uranus having a north pole vortex. And I think that's pretty interesting because, number one, it tells us the absolute immense light-gathering power and resolution of the Hubble Space Telescope, where they could see this, where spacecraft have passed by Uranus. The Voyagers passed by Uranus back in the 1980s, I believe it was, and took pictures, but they never saw this South Pole side of Uranus. And so it wasn't until it moved in its orbit into a position that allowed us to see that pole. And that's, you have two things here going on. You have the rotational pole, which is the physical pole. Then you have the magnetic pole, which is very much related because the currents in the counter-rotating sheets, the Van Allen-type belts, the radiation belts that surround the planets. Saturn has the rings that surround it, which are very definitely charged. Now, in Jupiter, we have 13 counter-rotating bands. And there again, the central band is westerly. That's the electron band. And that's in a clockwise direction as you're looking from the north pole of Jupiter. And if you're any bit familiar with physics, there's something called the right-hand rule. It's one of those little easy-to-remember things when you're a physicist. You take your fingers, take your right hand, stick your fingers straight out away from you and your thumb up. Now wrap your fingers as if they were being wrapped around a jar, let's say. So they wrap around towards you, and that's they're going in the direction of positive current. Then the magnetic field is up. And so that's what the situation is. But in this case, it's electron currents, and so that is in the opposite direction. So the positive current, all I'm saying is it follows the right-hand rule for these 13 bands to add together to create the magnetic field of Jupiter. Part of it, at any rate, the Jupiter does not have a lot of internal magnetic field. Mainly, Jupiter is a plasma ball. And so the magnetic field is comprised of the currents that are in these 13 current sheets. The westerly moving ones, they alternate. So the central equatorial current sheet is primarily electrons. It's moving in the westerly direction. Go north and go south. The next bands are moving in a counterclockwise direction when seen from above, and they're contributing to the magnetic field, the same magnetic field. Then you go out to the next counter-rotating bands around Jupiter. They're in the clockwise direction when you're looking down, and this alternates all the way up to the poles. And, of course, Jupiter has pole currents just like the Earth, the ring currents. And ultimately, this is what drives the magnetic field of Jupiter and Earth and Saturn and the Sun. Okay, So at any rate, a little bit of fun physics there dealing with magnetic fields and vortex situations at the pole. And once again, these vortices, which are cyclonic storms basically, are driven by electrical currents that attach to the upper ionosphere of these planets, and then those currents drive down through the cloud systems down to the ground and creating the ultimately the storm systems that you see around the poles. Okay, so this next topic is one that I want to really jump into here, get some perceptions, and to maybe dissuade some perceptions of what happens in the rise and fall in the so-called golden ages of man. And I'm going to be going through a number of these, and for better or for worse, because no matter whenever you have one of these golden ages, it seems like something negative happens at the same time. For example, if you look at the King Louis of France, who built Versailles, the unbelievable amount of actual just raw talent that existed at that time to pull something off. And, you know, if you're not familiar with this place, go online. And there's plenty of information, but it took unbelievable amount of stone cutters and people moving and gold working with metal, artists and artisans with sculptures, literally thousands of sculptures. You know, the amount of effort that went into these, or you take, say, the ancient Maya, and you, the ability to build these cities repeatedly. And so if you go to Uxmal or Chichen Itza or the other many, many cities throughout southeastern Mexico, Quintana Roo, Central America, and now they're realizing that there were millions of people living there in the heyday. These civilizations crescendoed, I guess that's the best word, that you can describe the culture and the music and the art and the use of resources and raw materials and painting, sculpture, and music and sports. For example, the Mayans had a game that they played much like basketball or soccer. It looked as if you see how they played it. It's kind of a combination of basketball and soccer for those who need some kind of an example. But here's the situation when you have so many resources that are available, and you have excess food, which gives people excess time, which gives people the ability to have enough time to sit down and do something besides just get food on the table for that night. Then these societies grow and prosper, and the tens of thousands of people that it took to put these societies together, the construction, the architecture, and then you have, on top of all of this, you have the architects and designers who were able to lay this out, and then all of the levels of talent that had to come underneath these architects. Absolutely unbelievable. So there had to be somebody with a vision that was in control, the czar or the king or the you know, the emperor or the pharaoh or the whatever, the leader, that had a vision of what should take place and then was able to direct it down the chain of command to get these societies moving. Now, let's compare that to what's going on in the United States. And I'm not going to dwell on this very much other than to say that the United States is I wouldn't say it's in decline. I would say it's completely gone. It's completely, there's no declining. It's in a free fall right now. but you have entire 2 to 3 generations that don't know anything, that are literally ignorant. They cannot add, they cannot do anything, they have no logic capability, they can't reason, they cannot read, they can't do even simple things like write something down on a piece of paper. They've broken the chain of custody of education. Let's just put it that way. Education, the chain of custody has been broken for so many generations now that it's impossible to bring it back. And only a few people will actually come out of this thing with a good education and the ability to do things. I don't want to go into a lot into the United States because it's a prime example of a failed society that is, and of course they never recognize it at the time. They always keep living on past laurels, with the expression, oh, this is the greatest country that's ever been on earth. But take away the technological tools that are used in, say, advanced countries, first world countries today, and what they've basically been able to do because of technology, because of using engines, because of the ability to just develop the resources. I guess that's the best way to put it, is resource development. But what's happened in the United States is that they've used up so many resources so quickly and devastated the ecology, the water systems, the farming systems, and everything else in between, that they've simply basically destroyed a place. Now, if you look at some of the really golden eras where they did not have technology, they did not have machines or petrol fuels or coal or everything was done by hand. And, for example, how did they move big blocks of stone? How did they accomplish perfectly fitting blocks of stone, things like that? And, of course, the word is now that I totally agree with, something I've been saying all along, is that that attributing the construction of the pyramids to the pharaohs just doesn't make any sense at all. They show no ability to build anything. There's no record of anything. And this is during a time when those records should have been easily handed down. We just don't see anything. So the only conclusion is that the Great Pyramids were built by somebody completely different. And that's actually known to be the case with the Mayans, where they inherited this area. They rebuilt the stone cities based on the old gridworks that were pointed towards north poles that were very different in an epoch much earlier in time. But let's take a look at one of these societies. And I'm not going to be very specific about which one I'm talking about, because this could fit quite a few. So what happens? First of all, there's agriculture. Excess food. Agriculture is succeeding to the point where people have food, good food, they live longer, they're healthier, they have extra time on their hands, and they start developing skills, kind of like woodworking skills, metallurgy, etc. And then they have time, say, on the evening, or in a lot of cultures also where they had winter. So they had to get their act together. And you find this a lot, for example, in medieval Europe. And then you have population growth based on the fact that you have excess agriculture, because the food chain allows prosperity. It allows relaxation time, and it allows the social structures to actually build. let's take a look back, something we know for a fact, that in the, say, the Native American days of North America, or look at the, go way back to the Neanderthal days in Europe. Or the, let's take, 1000 B.C., where there were small populations, very successful, of people who lived in Europe. And they lived off, there was abundant natural resources, and they were stable societies. They were able to grow. These were the precursors of the Celts. And remember that a lot of the populations from these areas came from the Moses event, where they came out of Egypt, the Israelites, and when they were wandering in the desert, a lot of them went north and east up to the Caucasian region of what are now known as the Caucasian regions of Russia, Western Russia, and then moved north and up into the Scandinavian countries, my ancestors, and then moved down and populated the islands, England, Northern England, and mainly Northern Ireland, and were very successful, Northern and Western Ireland. They also developed outposts in the areas that we now call Newfoundland and the Atlantic seaboard. And there's good indication that they also got down as far as where the Mayans were on some of their westerly trips. But they were very successful. There were abundant natural resources. And then they became more civilized, where they started cities and started developing cultures, started developing military. And this is actually an important part of this, because when you have military, you actually have a lot of structure in the society, where the youth have to be trained. And those are things that bring together a lot of the excess food, the metallurgy, and things advance. Now, let's just take a look at World War II. Let's look at what it was like at the beginning of World War II. The Germans were still pulling their little cannons around with horses. If you look at the end of World War II, the equipment that had been developed over the course of World War II would have eventually been developed, but it took only 3 to 4 years for massive developments in technology because of the war machine. Whether it's good or bad or anything else, the reality is that there was a tremendous surge of technological development. But so warfare plays a big part, and then also peacetime. There have been civilizations, for example, if you look at the Middle Ages Europe, of which a lot of our culture comes from now, or the Catholic Church, which was instrumental in maintaining knowledge in the ancient texts, etc., even though they were changed a lot, through the thousands of years, through the Dark Ages and then through the Middle Ages, it was the Catholic Church, and then the advent of the printing press and dissemination of knowledge, where people could start reading, and the ability to read and then pass along techniques, art techniques or music techniques, or have written music where you could have plays and literature and music, and these all are growing out of this abundance based on excess agriculture. So if you look at the United States right now, they're destroying agriculture. They're going the opposite direction on purpose. They're destroying education. They're taking away any books. Kids don't know how to open up a book anymore. You ask them something, oops, they got to flip it on their phone. And so it's one way of destroying a culture, is to take away its history. So you go up to kids today and you ask them a question, they don't know anything. They can't answer anything about history. And even if some of that history is not 100% correct, which it actually rarely is 100% correct, it's still they have to be disciplined enough to understand history and put together a chain of events that is logical. And like I say, a lot of history has been rewritten and changed. But if you have students that cannot put that together, even though it might be false information, they can't put it together, then you're in big trouble. The society has ended. You have generations which have broken the gap. And if you look at now, and something I'm involved in is high technology, you find that most of the people working in high technology today are older. They have put in maybe a full career, and they're still working because there's no one coming up that can handle the load. Kids today want a paycheck. They don't want to do anything. They don't have any discipline. They don't know anything. They want you to kowtow to all of their whimpering and whining. Compare this now to a culture in which the youth grow up working on the farm. And by the way, that's another thing. People talk today about white privilege. And that white privilege was earned. Instead of trying to be defensive about it, yeah. That was, you had a generation of kids that were taken off the farm. And they were strong kids. They're not like the wimpy brats that come out of cities today. But these were tough kids that grew up on a farm, working on the farm with the parents. And they put them in airplanes and working on airplanes and in World War II. And whether you agree with World War II or not, this group of people came back from World War II relatively hardened. There was no whimpering. There was no cow-cawing. There was no mother my dog attitude where everybody has to be privileged and has to have their little pronouns or whatever they need to feel good. Safe spaces or whatever. No, there were no safe spaces. People came back, and what did they do? The one thing that was central to that was resulted in what is known as the baby boom, where the people came back, they met their girlfriends, they got married, they had kids, they had families, they raised them, and they developed a country based on Christian standards. Now imagine an entire country in the Middle Ages based on farming and farming wealth, where they had entire regions, and of course they had horses, they had cattle, they had sheep, they had basically hand labor, they had metal, they had iron, they could make utensils that cut down a lot of work on the farm. They could make wheels, they had wagons, they had processing, and they had winter. And what happened during winter? Well, a couple things. When I grew up in Minnesota, we had an expression that winter gets the riffraff out. Because if you're not prepared for winter, you're going to die. I mean, you're going to die outside in 5 minutes. 40 below zero in the middle of the wintertime, if you don't know how to, if you're not prepared, if you're not set up to take care of yourself, you will die. You will die pronto. And so it's a way of, for example, that's when the kids would go to school during the wintertime. Summertime, they'd be off. And I started working when I was very young, and I think most of my friends did too, doing some kind of job where I had to be responsible. My very first was a paper route. I had to be responsible to go out and do that every day, collect the money, give the money to the company, the paper company, and I shoveled sidewalks. Let me tell you something, shoveling 5 feet of snow up and down the block, taking hours and hours and hours. There's no snowblower. This is done by hand, where you had to shovel one layer, then the next layer, then the next layer, till you get down to the sidewalk. and then you go up and down the block for a couple dollars to do the neighbors, that, you know, you learn responsibility, or in the summertime mowing the lawn. Nobody had to tell me. Nobody had to ask me. I just did it. And so did all my friends. But imagine a civilization in the Middle Ages, say in Central Europe, where they developed and had excess agriculture and started developing music, the local music styles, of which there are many, started developing to the point where there were operas and concertos and amazing music and the ability to build the instruments, very, very high quality instruments, and stone cutting and woodworking, art, painting, things that are still there today, things that would last centuries and centuries. How many buildings that are built today are going to last for centuries? No, they build a house for 20, 30 years, and then it starts needing major repairs. No, some of these buildings are hundreds and hundreds of years old, and they're still in the exact same condition as the day they were built. But also the knowledge on moving large things, just one little aspect, say cutting stones, cutting large stones, facing them off, putting a side on them, putting the top and the bottom and the sides parallel so they're perfectly square, and then fitting these together in very large structures, and then moving them into incredible locations. Just imagine these cultures that went on for, in some cases, hundreds of years, that very much influence the societies that we have today, which are being, by the way, destroyed. One question is, what are you going to do with, for example, entire three generations in the United States that don't know how to do anything? Are they going to be able to raise kids? What would their kids be like? What abilities are they going to have? They're going to be whiners, bigger whiners, privileged whiners. They're going to tell the government, you got to take care of these people because they don't know anything. They don't know how to do anything. Oh, but you got to do something with them. Or how about Liz Warren's idea where you just give them all a college degree, which completely waters down everybody else's degree that actually earned a college degree in a meaningful topic, like physics or mathematics or any of the other fields that actually have meaning. No, just hand out college degrees so that everybody can feel good and pretend that they're smart, like they went to college and learned something. No, the United States is on its way down, and that's one of the classic symbols of all of these societies that have come and gone throughout history, is that they started a decline, and they all have something in common, and it's the breakdown of the family unit. It's classic. It's there every time. And you'll see that the Communist Manifesto plays on that. It plays on the fact that it's well known that if you can destroy the family in a society, you will destroy the society. And that's what's going on. If you look at the societies that were highly successful, it was based on a very strong family unit where the kids grew up with a mom and the dad in the house and working from a very young age, taking responsibility from a very young age, and learning a trade, being there with the son when the dad is working or the mom, the daughter when the mom is working. And there's a balance. Now, there's a big effort today to minimize women who work in the kitchen. That's, you know, the women are the ones that, if it weren't for women, nobody would be on this planet. Real women. Not people that pretend they're women and, you know, swim in misgendered swimming competitions or something like that. Now, I'm talking about real women that take time out of their life to build the most important thing we have, the most important resource we have, and that's young, responsible people. It's the way it has worked throughout history, and it's the only way it's going to work. Because very simply, when a woman is getting close to childbirth, she's less and less capable of taking care of herself, and especially right at the time of childbirth, has very little ability to take care of the rest of the kids, etc. Although women do amazing things and bounce back and pick up their share of the housework and everything very quickly, still there is that point at which they need a man there to take care of things, and the man has to step in and not be chasing around with other women or all of the issues that go on today. The reason I'm talking about this is because the successful societies, you look back at any of them, it was based on the family. If there was a strong family presence in the society, it succeeded. If there wasn't, it did not succeed. That's just the way it is. It's just a simple fact. Nothing to debate. The other thing that you will notice, too, throughout history, is that the generations developed skills that were far advanced of what their parents had been doing. And that's the general trend. And when you see that stop, when that next generation does less and less than the prior generation, that's when you know that society is collapsing, it is going away. When you look at the societies, once again, say going back to the Middle Ages Europe, where the societies were developing generation after generation and building on that wealth of agriculture and knowledge, technology, knowledge, you find that, for example, stonecutters became far more skilled in their craft, and then the next generation became far more skilled, and you can see it in the architecture that developed through those ages. And then all of a sudden, a lot of times, when a particular person was no longer around, died or was out of the scene for some reason, or a war came, or somebody tried to invade the country and their attention was turned away, and those skills started to wane. In other words, the chain of control, the chain of command, the chain that links the past to the future, once it's broken, then you don't get that back. You can see that, for example, it happened in a culture like NASA, where they had supposedly developed all of this technology, and then on purpose, the space agency dismantled everything, even though there's a lot of questions about the Apollo space program. The Saturn V rocket was very real, and all of these technologies basically were lost, and it took another 50 years for space technology to get back to that very same level. There was an element in the culmination of the NASA space program of going to the moon. That's where all the questions are, but the rest of it was really did have the right stuff. There was a great, tremendous amount of development, of knowledge, and that chain was broken on purpose to prevent people from going into outer space. And that's exactly what's happening in society today. If you look at Europe, if you look at the United States especially, the ability to carry on these technologies and advance them from one generation to the next is just a telltale sign of the decline of the society. And those things cannot be recovered. I worked in technology myself in various capacities, telecommunications. I worked in companies where they were developing their own microchip technology, etc. And once those things are, once those technology chains are broken, believe me, they're just not coming back. So, moving off into the future a little bit here, and imagining what if you could start some kind of a project in the United States that took the mental disabilities, the mental disorder that's going on today, and directed it. Just want to remind you that back in the 1930s, there was the Depression, there was no money, and so what did they do? They took the kids up to the North Woods, and they were called the CCC, the Civil Conservation Corps. And what they did is they took these kids out of the cities and basically from all over the place, and they took them up and they put them in camps. They were like work camps, and they paid them, but they couldn't take the money and spend it. There was no place to spend the money. They were in the woods. And then that money they would typically send back to their parents. And I know about this because I know people that were in this organization. But what it did is it took the kids and put an axe and a shovel in their hand, and they built trails, they built, they helped people that built lodges and, you know, just other kinds of work in the North Woods. But it created, interestingly enough, it created the youth that then were used in World War II. They were disciplined. They had physical, they had been developed physically, and they could follow orders. You move that rock there, pick that rock up, dig that up, take this piece of wood, put it down there, shovel wood, shovel dirt behind it to make a step, you know, and it was just basic stuff. And so the question is, what do you do with a generation, actually three generations now, that are completely faltered, that really don't have any basis? And unfortunately, that's a very communist idea, to take kids out of their homes and put them into some kind of a work camp. But coming out of the Depression, that was the only game in town. And it did develop youth with character. But part of it, a very big part of it, is physical work. And that's where the youth today just completely fall down. I was on John Moore's show. I'm on there as a regular guest. But he talks about how the youth of today, 80% of them, cannot pass the fitness quality, the fitness exam to be into the U.S. military. In other words, they're overweight, they're out of shape, they're mentally unfit, they've been on drugs, they've been on some kind of pharmaceutical drug or illegal drugs, and the list goes on to the point where you should have youth, you should have 70 to 80% acceptance rate or more, where the youth are able to actually pass the military exams. And I actually did that myself, although I bowed out before I actually went to the military and eventually went on to get a conscientious objector exam, but I was in very good physical condition. I went out on my friend's farm in high school and in the summertime throwing bales of hay and doing farm work, getting basically in shape. But the very important for youth to develop and have that feeling of confidence that they are physically fit. Because I had friends who were not physically fit and they had confidence issues. Being able to take orders, to understand what to do, to work with a team, and, you know, something as simply as stacking up bales of hay took a certain amount of teamwork, coordination, and a lot of hard work, a lot of hard sweat. And sometimes if the rain was coming, you had to work three times as hard. And if the rain wasn't coming and it was hot, you was out there sweating in the hot June, July, August months of summer. And then go back to the farmhouse, eat supper, pass out, go to sleep, get up at 5 o'clock in the morning the next morning and start over and do the same. That's hard work. That's takes a lot of discipline. But I think it's going to take something like that to turn the society around in the United States. It's going to take a program where you simply take these worthless whiners and here's a shovel, you know, and here's an axe, and here, get out in the woods and start chopping those trees down and start moving them over here and, you know, making stairways and doing projects. And what they were doing also in the CCCs was that they were developing the wilderness for camping and for recreation. So it wasn't just useless work. It had a purpose, and when it ended up, it was a very nice, like the Europeans centuries ago developed their forest for recreation, for use, for organized control or management of the forest. But the United States just had all this natural wealth and they had never thought about that. Now, let's go back to the ancient Greeks, the Spartans. Their lifestyle was from the time they were very young to develop their physical characteristics, especially the young men. And then as their final test, they would send them out and basically a one-way ticket out into the wilderness with nothing. They had nothing to take with them. They had to make their own spears or whatever they were going to use and find food. They had to go do that on their own. And if they made it back alive, then they had passed the initiation. And this has happened. I used to be in education. I would never go back to education now, as crazy as it is. But I had parents that would come up to me and say, what should I do with my kids after college or after high school? I told them, buy them a one-way ticket to a third world country and don't give them any money. When they get off that plane, they don't have anything. They don't have a dime to take a taxi or find a hotel or get their first meal. And they have to work in that third world country to find the way back home. And by the time they get back home, they're going to be a very different person. Because today, college is nothing more than advanced babysitting. You repeat what's in the textbook or what the professor says. You get an A, you get success, you get a degree. A lot of times, a very worthless degree. But that's what I would honestly tell parents to do. And I don't know if any of them ever did it. But I'll tell you something, that's what I did myself. And it was an eye-opener. I had to travel and never, a lot of times, not really understand what's coming next. But I had been trained myself when I was young to be very disciplined and always have money available and take care of myself, because there was not going to be any money coming from my parents. They didn't have any. We had enough money for food, a nice warm place. I had a good place to study. They were very strict about doing all the homework, etc., and that, getting to bed at a decent time. And those characteristics carried through to my later life. And it's one thing when I got to college, a lot of the people there would be drinking every night and going out. And some of them flunked out. Some of them were still there after a year or 2 years. But I took it very seriously. And that carried me through my entire life. But my earlier discipline was instrumental in my ability to maintain that discipline when I finally got away from home. And that's what's missing today. The young girls don't have any ability to take care of themselves. Young men don't have any ability to take care of themselves. You put it together and you have a bombshell of a destruction of society. Maybe there's some few out there that can, but the vast majority cannot. And I can tell you that because I've seen it, I've witnessed it myself. It's not something, some statistic that I read in a book someplace. But the one way to turn all of this around is to have literally a job corps where people, and I'm talking physical work, I'm not talking about sitting at a desk looking at TikTok videos or something. I'm talking about physical labor that gets people in shape and with the understanding that discipline is a big part of it. And it's the only way to turn it around. And then also instill the most important thing, the absolute most important thing, is to instill the value of family in the youth of today. Without that, you're not gonna have a future generation. Just quickly, I want to mention my water filter products, JMCC water filters. I have the MR5 whole house water filter that provides basically a pure mountain stream in your house for both hot and cold water. You can get a 10% discount. Go to the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. Also, I'll remind you that my new book is on Amazon. It's an experiment, seeing how that works, and it's been selling quite well. The name is The Real History of Man and Earth, Myths, Magic, and Mayhem. Like I say, and that's also available in an ebook format. On Amazon, it's just available as a print version. It's available in a color ebook format on my webpage, jmccsci.com. So go there, and then also with the water filters, I have the gravity replacement filter elements that replace filter elements in any of the gravity units that have been produced since the year 2000. Those are those two stainless steel canisters that sit in the kitchen. And I have the best replacement filter elements on the planet at the lowest price and including free shipping. So a lot of information there. And you have to be water independent. If you're not water independent, you're in big trouble. You may not know it. Every day you're taking on polluted, toxic water. So go there, jmccwaterfilters.com and jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.